Be nice.
I won't fall out.
Glad the minority is at this end.
I would like to call the House Special Committee on World Trade, Foreign and State Relations, State and Federal Relations, I guess that is kind of foreign, to order. This is January 31st, 1995. We're in Capitol Room 408. Ben, would you please call the roll?
Sure. Representative Mackey?
Here.
Representative Cabina?
Here.
Representative Williams?
Here.
Representative Gary Davis?
Here.
Representative Mulder?
Here.
Representative Phillips? Representative Barnes?
Present. The record reflects that there is a quorum of the members present. At this time, we are going to begin hearings on House Bill 83, Review of Federal Mandated Programs. The bill is prime sponsor is Representative Ogun, and Representative Davis, is your box on there?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Thank you, sir. Representative Ogun, would you please begin giving us your sponsor statement?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I introduced House Bill 83, which I believe is the one we're hearing first, is that correct?
That's correct.
As a companion bill to House Joint Resources 8, a resolution retaining to mandates and other conditions imposed on the states by the federal government. Whereas the resolution articulates the resolve of the citizens of the state to stand against further attempts by the federal government to encroach upon our autonomy and rights as a state under the 10th Amendment and to the United States Constitution, this bill provides a simple and practical modality for taking that stand. House Bill 83 requires that any commissioner or agency head faced with implementing a federal mandate or condition must first carefully analyze the mandate for three specific difficulties before making any efforts at compliance. First, is the federal policy or legislation an unconstitutional abrogation of state power? Second, is it in conflict with state policy? And third, is the federal mandate a cost-effective method in this state for dealing with the problem it addresses? The agency head or commissioner will present his findings in the form of a written report to the governor, the Legislative Budget Audit Committee, and the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. The two legislative committees receiving such reports shall review them and are authorized to research the legality of the mandate. Their conclusions shall be presented to the governor along with specific recommendations to the executive branch for compliance, modified compliance, or a legal challenge, last but not least. This bill provides a mechanism to scrutinize efforts by the federal government to impose unsuitable policy on our state and to assert our rights to self-determination, a right purchased for us at high cost by the ancestors.
Thank you, Representative Ogun. Does that conclude your sponsor statement?
Yes, ma'am, it does.
Do members of the committee have questions for Representative Mackey?
Yeah, just I guess a legal question. I've always heard in the past that, for example, in DEC and other agencies where we've received federal mandates on clean air and all the different federal acts that have been pushed on us, that if we don't implement them, then we lose funding or other types of things. What sort of legal problems or financial problems do you see by us not enacting federal mandates, I guess, in terms of either any legal problems in complying with federal law or loss of revenues to the state? Has anybody analyzed what kind of money we would lose by not implementing some of these?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. To the best of my knowledge, there hasn't been an analysis done on that. I know my staff hasn't researched that issue specifically. However, I would like to point out that it is cost-effective to do this, if I can find the information I was looking for. This is the one. This 1994 mandate catalog, right now, Congress imposes, there were 20 new mandates imposed by Congress in the last 2 years. And there's a total of 192 mandates and preemptions that the federal government imposes on our state now as we speak. And, for example, the city of Anchorage, and it's in one of your handouts, Municipality of Anchorage studied how much just environmental mandates alone cost the city of Anchorage. I believe that was in a one-year period. Is that?
It's a nine-year period.
Nine-year period. Thank you, Alan. $429,936,737, almost a billion, or a half billion dollars, or half a billion dollars worth of unfunded environmental mandates in that time period, in less than 10 years. Right now, there has not been any study done within the state to find out how much federal mandates cost. So if these commissioners do analyze this on a case-by-case basis, I'm sure they would consider that, whether or not to be cost-effective to fight them or not.
Just to follow up, I guess my understanding in the past when I've inquired about why are we doing this if they're not giving us the money, a couple things have been brought up. Is one, if we don't adhere to the federal mandates in DEC, for example, then we got the EPA managing and different problems there. I guess at some point in time I'd like to look, all the way down to Medicaid and, all the other programs that are federally funded or where we get federal monies. Does it also affect a lot of those, federal highway dollars for pollution control requirements that we have to put in and those kinds of things? The financial impact on the state, I guess, I agree with the intent of the rhetoric behind unfunded mandates, but at some point in time, if we can see an analysis on what kind of costs and so forth be associated with it, I'd like to see it.
And Speaker May.
Representative Ogun.
Or just comment on that. I think this bill would, if anything, would bring that to the forefront, because right now there's no modality to set up and even analyze any of this, and then that's one of the three categories that tells whether or not it's cost-effective to implement the mandate and look for more cost-effective ways to do it. I'm sure they would take that, whether we're going to lose funding for refusing to do a mandate, into consideration.
Okay, so it gives them the option and the flexibility to implement it or not?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Additional questions from committee members? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Ogun, I don't know of any federal mandate that the state has to spend money on. I think we can reject any. That would be my understanding. We can reject any of them. I don't know of any that we don't have to implement. All environmental, if the state does not implement them, then EPA does it. It handles the administration and implementing. I'm not sure. ICE-T dollars, there are several requirements that we and give. There's a time frame allowed to implement. We went through the helmet law last year. We had so many years to implement the helmet law, or there would be a percentage of those federal highway dollars that would not be able to be spent on highway construction. And I don't know of any other federal mandates that, there are plenty of mandates. It's just that everybody says, okay, the feds are telling us to do this, so we do it. That's my understanding, and I may be off on that, but while I'm still speaking, the Senate, I believe the U.S. Senate has just passed SB1, which was their response to unfunded mandates and how they would handle it. And the House has a similar bill. The U.S. Congress has a similar bill that they're expecting to pass, I believe, this week. Mm-hmm. And the President is supposed to also be in agreement with this. So there is definitely action, and through all these types of bills and resolutions over the last 4 or 5 years at state levels and throughout the United States, we're being heard, I believe. So exactly how Congress will address them, and I'm not sure about the details of the legislation that they are passing. But we are being heard on this, and I, like I'm sure every one of us, I definitely agree with the sentiment behind this legislation. No problem at all there. There are some, I think, some real technical and legal questions that do come up with this legislation, however.
Madam Speaker. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think in response to Representative Davis' question, I don't believe we have any option on the mandates that come down with education, public education, as far as handicapped special education type provisos, et cetera. I think that we have to do those regardless. Representative Mackey.
I guess one question is the bill necessary to do this, or does the administration have the ability now, or do we have to give statutory authority to the administration to be able to refuse federal mandates?
Representative Mackey, it would be my thought if the administration in the past had felt they were able to do it, surely that they would have. I'm not aware that they do or do not have that flexibility.
I think, Madam Speaker, can I speak on this? I think one of the things this bill does, if you look through this mandate catalog here, over and over you say, no, it says no funds will be provided, no deed or instrument of command shall be accepted. It requires the state to compile, publish, submit. The list just goes on and on of all these things that the federal government routinely blackmails us and ends up costing untold millions of dollars a year worth of expenses to the state and to municipalities. For example, that just an environmental one. Like I said, in a less than 10-year period, almost $430 million in less than 10 years to the municipality of Anchorage. Now, that's an unfunded mandate, basically, is a form of taxation that the federal government wants to pass a program, but they don't want to fund it, so they just say, well, the states have to do this, otherwise, if you don't do it, we'll blackmail you, we won't give you funds for this or that, and it's a form of taxation that's being passed on to the citizens of the state under the threat of blackmail, and I don't have all the answers, but I think this bill would provide a modality to bring these issues to the attention and require the state to bring these issues to the attention of the governor and the commissioners, and maybe we can look at what would be cost effective to fight.
Representative Cabina.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think we should, as a legislature, remember that we're probably more guilty than the federal government. We require the cities to do things, whether it's senior citizens tax rebates, we don't fund them, whether it's telling the school districts to teach something else and we don't fund them, whether it's telling each department to make out another report, even though they're put zero fiscal notes, I can tell you there's a cost to it, and somebody, it's coming out of somebody's budget. So every time we pass a law and direct anybody in the state of Alaska, we're really doing the same thing, and in essence, not funding it. So just a point that we're probably as guilty as anybody.
So additional questions or comments to Representative Oban? There being none, the next person to testify is the former Lieutenant Governor, Jack Coghill. Lieutenant Governor, we welcome you. Mr. Lieutenant Governor Coghill, you have the floor. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. My name is Jack Coghill. I'm testifying today on my behalf. I like the bill. I think that the committee should pass on House Bill number 83. I see where Representative Hogan has got some recommended amendments that I wholeheartedly concur with. I think that they're cost-saving. In answer to the questions that were discussed at the table, if you take a real good hard look at the bill, this is exactly what this bill does, is it leaves the policymaker, which is the legislature, directing the administration and directing the people within the agencies to give a report so that you folks can act accordingly. And the second part of this bill puts the legislature right in the position of being in the driver's seat. And I think that Representative Covino had the right approach to it, the right approach being that you folks are the policymakers. In 1981, I was the chairman of the Statehood Commission, and we addressed it at that time. And it's been around, and you hear it all the time, discussing all of these federal mandates and these things that are coming out of Washington, D.C. And this is the first time I've seen somebody focus on it to the point where that we will be able to do something about it. If you pass this, it will then give the it will give the emphasis that federal mandates and the federal programs have to be looked at as far as cost effectiveness and how you're going to do it. I think it's a great bill.
Members, I have questions for the Lincoln Governor. There being none, we'd like to thank you so much for
it's rather interesting being on this end of the table.
I bet.
This body's always been easy on you.
This time we will go to our teleconferencing network, and the first site that we will go to, we have Delta Junction, Matsu, Kenai, Soldotna online. But we will go to the Matsu Borough first. Matsu there?
Yeah, this is Bob Shoemaker. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you very good.
Good. Thank you, and thank you for listening to me, and I appreciate having the time to talk to you about this. This is something that I, as an individual, and I'm also a member of the Alaska Independence Party, was one of those things that we had talked about many times. But as an individual, feel this is probably a very important issue for you to consider, and of course I hope pass it on. I like the bill as it is. It's the message that you send and the medium that you in attendance, you there, send it. That's what makes a difference. I remember hearing the one fellow say, I don't think that we have to implement any of these programs. Well, that's kind of not really the fact. The money, there's money, people like to take it, and that's kind of the way it's been working. And now that our state's kind of on not dire straits, but our funding's a little bit shorter, I think it's important for us to wake up and do something different. These different mandates, and I know I've heard a couple things, there, public education, man, if you just sit down and put the pencil to some of those things, you'd want to get rid of them in a heartbeat if you're a private business. And the environmental mandates, they cost a lot of jobs. And I'm sure there's two sides to weigh on every coin, but right now I think employment's probably one of the most important things to me, and I think probably to Alaska and probably to America. And I really support this bill, and I hope that you'll pass it on. I thank you for listening to me.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Do members of the committee have questions? There being none, we will move to Delta Junction, and then we will go to Kenai, Soldotna, and then back to Matsu. Delta Junction, do you have anyone there?
Yes, we do. Jean would like to testify.
Please state the name for the record and who they represent, if any.
Well, good evening. My name is Jean Ottenstrahler. I'm just a person from Delta Junction here, concerned about our freedoms here in the little state of Alaska. And what I've got to say about this bill is I think in general it's a good one. You guys, before you start taking all this funding, should look what the outcome's going to be at the end. I mean, just because they're out there with their fishing pole with some money on the end of it, and at the end of the line, we don't have to take it. We got to start looking at the results, the ending results, what we're going to have to give up, how much freedom we're going to have to give up, how it's going to affect our people. And so we need to actually try to get away from some of those federal mandates and put them in the hands of the state where they belong, to control its own people. And I think if people down there are well educated enough to know how to do that without having federal involvement. Thank you.
Members of the committee have questions? There being none, we will move to Kenai, Soldotna. We thank you for your testimony. Kenai, Soldotna, are you there?
Yes, I am. This is Scott Hammond, and speaking for myself today, and I'd like to say that I think this is a pretty good bill. I think there's a big need for it. Gary mentioned SB1. I know that it did pass. I know there's a companion bill in the House. The problem with those bills, though, is they're only restricting mandates that have over a $50 million per state limit on it. So they can $50 million us to death. So there is a big need for this type of a bill in the state so that we can get rid of them. I think the biggest problem that I see with this bill is that it lets us implement the mandates first and then review it after the year's done. And I think we need to have a vehicle in here to review the program before it ever is introduced and decide if we ever even want to do it in the first place, instead of waiting for a year or two and deciding whether or not we want to continue on with it. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members of the committee have questions? There being none, we will move back to the Mat-Su Borough.
Sorry, did you come back to the Mat-Su Borough?
We are back to the Mat-Su Borough.
I was the only individual. And
thank you very much. We appreciate you coming out and testifying. We will go back to Delta Junction.
Delta doesn't have anyone to testify now, thanks.
We will go back to Kenai Soldotna.
This is Gary Superman from Nikiski. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm really surprised at the amount of 10th Amendment resolutions and bills that have come before you this session so far. Something some of us down here have been involved with for some time, the guys sitting around this table. I guess to get down right to specifics with HB 8, I don't have any problem with the corresponding resolution. I think that Representative Ogun really has a handle on the need for this. However, in the HB 8, I know that everyone around the country is basically copying the Colorado Senate bill. And I'm a little concerned with the legislative review section in 8. I think that it's just much too open-ended, that we need to maybe call out some of the sections of the Colorado bill that deals with the specific oversight, deals with the formation of a budget committee, deals with the mandates that come to us, whether or not we are going to implement them, that the whole open-ended question of implementation is left with us. It doesn't just go out on the street. We don't just begin to bureaucratize those programs, that we decide ourselves whether or not it's we can afford it, whether or not it fits in with our lifestyle, whether or not we want it at all in our state. So I wish that you guys would dig up that Colorado Senate bill. I know you've got it. And take a look at Section 2 and try to, intersperse some of that in this. It's much more assertive than this HB 8, and I think you need to go back and review it.
Thank you very much. Members of the committee have questions? Madam Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Gary, this is Gail. I just wanted to follow up on your opening comment where you were surprised at the number of 10th Amendment resolutions or bills put forth this time. And that just brings up a point that I wanted to make on the power of people talking, because if there was one thing the last interim that people talked about and set up meetings about, it was this subject. All over the Kenai Peninsula, I met with people specifically on the legislature taking action on this. And I appreciate the input that we had from the general public during the interim.
Additional members have questions or comments? There being none, thank you so much for your testimony. At this time, we will allow the sites to remain online in case additional people show up to testify. If they do, would the monitor there please notify us if there are additional people? At this time, we would ask if there's a representative of the administration here to testify on this bill. There being none, we had understood there would be.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Soldat, and we have two people that would like to testify.
Fine. Would you have the next person come, please?
This is Mike Seaman. At this point, I really can't say one way or another. I think this bill is needed. Whether this is the right way to go, I don't think I want to comment it right now. Thanks.
Additional people online?
Yeah, this is Seymour Mills from Sterling. Any bill that is passed has to have written into it there is a review to check to see that it fits under Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution before anything ever happens. If it doesn't, anything that comes from the feds, if it doesn't fit under that, then it has to be rejected, and rejected totally. And some of the wording, there's some things I've seen in some of the bills, that a couple of things that I've liked. One is a reference, and it should be addressed in some of this papers, to the Republican form of government. That's what it gets down to. That's what we have drifted away from. And also the fact of state citizens. And we have rights to enforce this against the federal government. We must do it. That's all.
Thank you. Do members of the committee have questions? Comments? If not, if you live in Sterling, please say hello to my son down here.
Madam Chair, I thought we were operating under a democratic form of government, but I guess that's changed.
About time you figured that one out.
Is there anyone at any of the sites additionally that would like to testify at this time? There being none, again, we will leave the monitor open for a period of time to see if anyone is going to come online. This time we would ask a member of the administration.
Madam Chairman, I'm Jack Kreinheder with the Office of Management and Budget. The reason I didn't chime up earlier is I'm here primarily to speak to House Joint Resolution 20, but if you would like comments on behalf of the administration on House Joint Resolution 8 and House Bill 83, I can offer some brief comments.
We would appreciate that.
The when you do get to House Joint Resolution 20, I do have a statement in support of that resolution. In regard to these bills, or House Bill 83 and HGR 8, I have not been informed of a definite position pro or con on them. I did speak with Pat Pochot, the governor's legislative liaison, a half hour or so ago about them, and the Pat did want to stress that the governor's the administration is supportive of the intent of these measures. The governor certainly supports more flexibility for Alaska to deal with our unique circumstances in ways that fit us and not something dictated from Washington, D.C. As far as House Bill 83 goes, the administration does have some concern about the requirement to review, as I understand it, every federal program that has some federal requirements. The administration's position is that it may be better to concentrate our resources on the programs that are identified by the legislature and the administration as the ones with the biggest fiscal impacts or that present the biggest problems for the state, rather than running through the whole laundry list of programs, a number of which may not present a problem, particularly the ones that are funded. I note on page 2 of House Bill 83 that the language on lines 12 through 15 don't speak just to unfunded mandates, but to all federal programs with some requirement. So again, the administration is concerned about federal mandates, particularly unfunded ones. We're more than willing to work with the legislature in identifying programs of concern and reviewing those, but again, are concerned about the waste of about spending more time and money than might be necessary to accomplish our goals on that.
Thank you so much. Do members of the committee have questions? Representative Mackey.
Just one, since he is from OMB, as soon as you're ready, I was going to move the amendment that Representative Ogun had offered, and it deals with switching from the commissioner of each department reviewing them all to the office of OMB. And I do think that's appropriate because OMB builds those budgets anyway for the governor's office. And
Representative Mackey, the chair would entertain your motion at this time.
Okay, I would so move, Madam Chair, and I guess I just wanted to comment from OMB if that's something they have a problem with. I don't know that it matters, but it certainly seems appropriate, I guess, that this amendment be.
Speaking of what I believe is the intent of Representative Ogun, some of the fiscal notes were quite high, and he felt that by moving them this to just one agency, OMB, to review, that it should reduce the fiscal notes on them considerably. So if you have comments on it, we'd be glad to entertain them at this time.
Madam Chair, the I can't speak for my boss, Annalee McConnell, on this without checking with her first. The, just off the cuff, the concept makes some sense. Whether OMB could do this with no fiscal impact is another question. But I agree in concept that it may make more sense to have one agency do the review or work with the departments on it.
Thank you very much. Is there further discussion on the amendment, Representative Mackey?
Yeah, just in favor of the amendment, I think the practicality of having OMB do that would actually save a lot more money. It is going to cost some money to do this, but the amount of money that will be saved as a result of it will obviously more paid for it than not. You know, by some of them that would be eliminated and not being funded. So, from a practical standpoint, it has to be done. Otherwise, we'll never be able to make those decisions. And OMB building the budgets and having access to all agency department budgets certainly is the place for that to go. And I do appreciate that amendment. I think it's appropriate.
What we would do is, because you don't have a fiscal note here, we would, if we adopt this amendment and choose to pass it out, we would hold until we were able to get your fiscal note, because this fiscal note would be zeroed out for all these others, and we would sort of entertain a much smaller one than you.
Madam Chair, if I could just make one comment, even if the Office of Management and Budget did oversee this work, we would certainly have to work with the departments who are the experts on their programs. So I just wanted to note that this would not entirely eliminate the involvement of the department.
Well, I understand that, but certainly I would expect their fiscal notes to be considerably less. Members of the committee have additional questions or comments. You wish to say something, representing Hess?
Madam Chair, Elmer Lindstrom from Health and Social Services is one of the guilty parties of one of the high fiscal notes. I'd be delighted to try to defend it if you had any interest in that.
Well, Elmer, we're getting rid of you here, so.
Speaking on maybe in defense of OMB, who will come up against this, I know when we were looking at the bill, we looked long and hard, and as been pointed out earlier, first thing you need to decide is what is a mandate. We took a very expansive view of that. Virtually every federal dollar that comes into our department has some requirements to it, and we were willing and interested in looking at each and every one of those. There are other kind of mandates that affect the departments as well. We are subject to federal regulatory mandates, be they laboratory standards or the ADA requirements that are on the private industry or on the state as well. So it's a very broad brush, and OMB will need some resources to do that unless you give direction of what you want to look at and what you don't want to look at. And for our department, it is a very, very broad spectrum of things that we had intended to look at with our very high fiscal note.
For the record, the person just speaking was Elmer Lindstrom from the Department of Health and Social Services. Ben, could you pick him up from where he was sitting? Okay, good. Representative Mackey,
did you?
Representative Cabina?
Madam Chairman, the other thing that comes to my mind is, as this bill works its way through, the sponsor might think about doing something where once a program has been reviewed and a report written on it, that's the end of it. It appears that it's got to be done every year. And then in succeeding years, you might do any new programs that come to those departments so that you don't have to go back and do the same one over again once it's been done.
Well, after we have dispensed with this amendment, perhaps we could deal with any other amendments that committee members might have. The amendment before us, we will number amendment number one, and what is the pleasure of the committee? Is there further discussion on amendment number one? There being none, Ben, would you call the roll?
Representative Matthews.
Yes.
Representative Cabina.
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Yes.
Representative Davis?
Yes.
Representative Mulder?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Chairman Barnes?
Yes. And so amendment number one has been adopted. Committee members have additional amendments at this time. There being none, what is the pleasure of the committee with this bill? Madam Speaker.
Madam Chairman, I move for adoption of House Bill 83 to move out of committee with individual recommendations.
CS.
Oh, see at the CS for House Bill 83.
Is there objection? There being none, a CS for House Bill number 83 will move from our committee, and we will hold it until OMB has prepared an additional fiscal note. And we would expect that Health and Social Services would come back with one a tiny bit lower.
Thanks.
The next bill before us is HJR 8. Representative Hogan, HJR 8.
Still on the euphoria from the first one.
This is called Hogan Day before this committee. We don't want him to think this will happen again anytime soon.
I appreciate you indulging the freshman legislator, Madam Chairman. Now, like I said, I'm still getting over the first one passing. And HJR 8 is, it's a red one, that's the hot one here. I've introduced HJR 8 as a means of articulating and resolve the citizens of the state to stand against further attempts by the federal government to encroach upon our autonomy and rights as a state under the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution. The resolution reflects a widely held opinion that the federal government has grossly exceeded its authority to make and enforce policy in certain areas. The United States Constitution creates a federal government of limited jurisdiction and permits government at that level to exercise only those powers specifically granted in the document. The 10th Amendment specifically articulates the principle reflected throughout the Constitution that all governmental authority not explicitly granted to the federal government is reserved to several states. It is clear that Congress has lost any understanding of its limited role and continues to enact legislation dealing with this issue, with issues that are completely outside of its jurisdiction, as that jurisdiction is defined in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Such legislation typically authorizes the various executive agencies to promulgate regulations which are oppressive, unconstitutional, and demonstrate little understanding of our concern for the unique conditions and problems faced by the citizens of the state of Alaska. A prime example of this abuse is the federal management of fish and wildlife resources within the state. It is specifically addressed in HJR 8, which I might point out is not addressed, at least in the original version of the Senate bill.
Representative Hogan.
Am I out of line?
You're out of order. We did not discuss bills in the other body.
I stand corrected. Nowhere in the United States Constitution is either Congress or executive branch given authority to regulate or manage fish and game, except to the extent that these resources enter the flow of interstate commerce. If it is an abrogation of the state governmental authority, as if the abrogation of state governmental authority were not enough, many of these constitutionally dubious federal mandates require state or local governments to pay for their implementation. These unfunded mandates have imposed enormous burdens on smaller governments already stretched thin by the effort required to meet their own responsibilities. This resolution is a timely statement to the federal government demanding that it cease and desist from interfering with Alaska's right to determine policy in those areas reserved to the states, from attempting to manage Alaska's fish and wildlife resources. End of sponsor statement.
Members of the committee have questions, comments. Is there anyone still left on the teleconferencing line? There being none at this time, we have a Mr. Gordon W. Epperly from Juneau who would like to testify. Mr. Epperly.
Thank you.
Epperly.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Gordon Epperly. I'm here to represent myself, and I'm here to support HAR number 8 and other similar resolutions that are before this legislature. The only thing I'd like to do is bring to your attention more or less the problem. And until you realize the problem, you're not going to be able to tag it. I think the easiest way I can address the problem here is read a statement that came out of a congressional committee in regard to that we are now in a state of national emergency. And this is a statement that came from Senator Frank Church, and it is published in the congressional record. Since March 9, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency. In fact, there is now in effect 4 presidential proclaimed states of national emergency. In addition to the national emergency declared by President Roosevelt in 1933, there are also the national emergency proclaimed by President Truman on December 16, 1950, during the Korean conflict, and the states of national emergency declared by President Nixon on March 23, 1970, and August 15, 1971. These proclamations give force to 470 provisions of federal law. These hundreds of statutes delegate to the President extraordinary powers ordinarily exercised by the Congress, which affect the lives of American citizens in a host of all-encompassing manners. This vast range of powers taken together confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional process. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, the President may seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control all transportation and communications, regulate the operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and a plethora of particular ways control the lives of all American citizens. We're still in that state of national emergency. Some of that national emergency was suspended in 1976. That's your basic problem. The root of your problem is 2 amendments to the federal constitution, the 14th Amendment and the 17th Amendment. I won't go into what they were saying is that Article 5 delegates that authority directly to Congress. I believe you're going to have to take this matter directly to the United States Court of Federal Claims. Another problem is the 17th Amendment. I haven't done a whole lot of work on it. I was just getting kind of started into it, but I'll tell you why I believe it's not an amendment to the Constitution. First of all, when the 13 states came together, they created the United States and they created Articles of Confederation to operate those states. Those Articles of Confederation, by the way, are still in effect. They have never been repealed, except maybe as modified by the Constitution. In there, they recognize that the states are corporations, and as a corporation, it can only be represented by delegates. That statement, again, was they kind of stopped short of saying that they do. And I think we need to take some bold action there to bring this issue to light. Another problem is you got the last sentence of Article 5 that says no state shall be denied of a suffrage in the Senate without the consent of the its consent. And yet we find that there are several senators here when it came up before the committee said no to the resolution. So obviously they did not have their consent there. And then when it went to the states for ratification, there were two states that said no, Utah and New Jersey, and there were nine states that didn't even vote on the issue. So obviously they all also did not give their consent. So these are issues that you might want to consider.
Well, Mr. Epley, we have your statement that you prepared it and the backup, and we're grateful to you. I know you took time off from your job to come and testify. We very much appreciate it. Members of the committee have questions? There being none, we have one other person. Thank you again, Mr. Epley. Online, and the Matt Fu, who would like to testify, Mr. Robert Shoemaker.
Yeah, I want to say thank you one more time, and I appreciate it. My name is Robert Shoemaker again, and I listened on I guess it was HJ 83 also. I support this HJ number 8 and hope you in attendance again send this message along. Of course, it's the medium that really counts. Reaffirming, I believe it's right there, the 10th Amendment rights guaranteed to us. Or to the states by our Constitution, that's the Constitution of the United States. And I realize that the fishing game seems to be a hot issue, and of course I've really been quite upset about the position that our governor has taken on this, and I hope that those with enough foresight realize that our Constitution for the state allows a different perspective, and hope that something gets done about that anyways. I might add that book mentioned by Judge Bork is well-written and, to me, seemingly or extremely credible. I can't say for sure. I don't know Mr. Bork personally, but I do support this and hope that you'll pass it on. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I don't believe that there is anyone else online. Members of the committee, what is your pleasure on HJR 8? Representative
Malton. Madam Speaker, I was appreciating the somewhat more modest fiscal note on this resolution. I would move HJR 8 from committee, asking unanimous consent with accompanying zero fiscal note.
Their objection. Hearing none, HJR 8 will move from the committee with the zero fiscal notes. Madam Speaker.
Madam Chairman, I just might comment on the fact, for as many committee meetings as I've sat through on so many different topics over the years, I don't know if I've ever seen a member of the public as well prepared with as much paperwork backup as Mr. Epperly has brought in today. And I appreciate the work that you have done on that.
Yes, Mr. Epperly, we very much do appreciate it. The next resolution before us is HJR 20. That is a resolution introduced by me, co-sponsored by many other members. At this time, I would give a brief opening statement. HJR 20 authorizes the state of Alaska to send an official delegation to a conference of the states to be held during 1996. This conference would be the first formal meeting of the 50 states since 1786. Delegates from all 50 states would debate and vote on an action plan designed to restore the checks and balances between the state and the federal government. While the action plan would not be binding on the federal government, it would be impossible for Congress or the President to ignore it. This conference would receive national and international media attention, and actions taken would have to be considered by the federal government. The governor and four lawmakers, two from each house, would be voting delegates at the conference. If each of the 50 states send a delegation, there would be a total of 250 members at the conference. This resolution is an important first step towards restoring the balanced system of government envisioned by the 10th Amendment, and I ask that you vote and move it from committee today. Also with us today is Brian Weberg with the National Conference of State Legislators. I've asked him to give us an update, so we will hear from Mr. Weberg first. Mr. Weberg.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, it's terrific to be here. Thanks for this opportunity. My name is Brian Weberg. I'm the Director of Legislative Management for the National Conference of State Legislatures, and I'm here from Denver this week. I bring news about the conference of the states. It has been endorsed by the National Governors Association, by NCSL, my employer, and of course the Council of State Governments, who will administer the conference should it occur. As of last Friday, three states already have passed this resolution, Kentucky, Utah, and Virginia. In six other states, it has passed one chamber, and it has been introduced in 19 other states. So there's quite a bit of activity, and in fact, this week, I think we'll see quite a bit more, and this list will grow considerably by Friday in terms of states that have enacted the resolution. I could provide other information as I know it if you have questions. That's the status report at this point.
Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Brian, we visited earlier today. Your guess is that one of the specifics in the bill is to require that at least 26 legislatures adopt a similar resolution. When we were visiting earlier, you thought that might be the case?
I think that it probably will happen, and we sat around the office last week and looked at the likely candidates or states that would pass it, and I think it's fairly likely this will go. As you have all pointed out here today, these 10th Amendment issues are on the agenda here and in most other states, and this is, I think, a way of really bringing these issues to the forefront in a coordinated way among the states, and I think that's the way a lot of people see it. The timing seems to be right. Of course, there is the balanced budget amendment that's been mentioned here that's passed the House, I believe, and is in the Senate, and then the mandate bill, SB1, which has passed the Senate and is in the House. So there are other things going on as well. Those are especially the mandate bill is something that we've all been looking for quite a bit over the last year or so. And it's nice to see those things happening, but this is an additional, I think, push to assert the state's notion about this relationship.
I would just like to say, Brian, and then I'll get back to Eldon, that it has pleased me over the last couple of 3 years to see NCSL become involved in these movements to assert states' rights, because I know it's been mentioned many, many times in the Executive Committee of NCSL and other meetings that I have attended there. Representative Mulder, do you have additional?
I wanted to follow up basically with the same comment. When we were down in New Orleans this past year, and even in the previous year in San Diego, a great deal of time was dedicated toward the issue about states' rights and about unfunded federal mandates. And I appreciate the role that the National Conference of State Legislatures has taken, because they really have taken a leadership position. And I appreciate them working in conjunction with the Council of State Governments to be a proactive force in this line. I think it shows a great deal of forethought, and it shows that you're listening to your constituents, the people that you're working for at the state legislatures, and I really appreciate your efforts.
On behalf of NCSL, I appreciate it.
Madam Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Brian, what kind of feedback are you getting from Congress to this point?
Well, I think that, we have a new Congress, and and I think they're pretty supportive, I think, you know, in terms of this kind of initiative, as I suppose you all might expect. We are going to have a meeting in Washington in March where we will bring state legislative leaders together with the new congressional leaders and with the administration, and I think that's when we'll really get a good notion about how they feel. And of course, at that point, we'll probably have a pretty good idea about whether or not this is going to go forward. But I think that there's a fair amount of support for it. I think that as long as it remains narrowly construed, as it's drawn up, that it will carry forward.
Madam Speaker,
where, just to continue, this will, if this occurs, this will be a very historic meeting. Mm-hmm. What is the historic record of calls such as this on the states?
I believe that this is entirely unique. There hasn't been a convention of the states since 1787. And,
has there ever been a call for the states?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of. So this is quite unique, and the vehicle that they're describing here, a state's petition to Congress and to the administration, is a unique vehicle for expressing the state's opinion on this topic. But as I'm sure you all can imagine, the press will be focused on this, and the public will be focused on this, and so if a unified opinion comes out of that conference, it's going to be heard.
Thank you so much, Brian. Additional comments or questions by members? There being none, thank you again, Brian. We will now hear from the administration.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a position statement which I'd like to convey. If you take one and pass those down to the chair, please. Madam Chair, the Knowles administration does support House Joint Resolution 20 relating to the Conference of the States. As I said earlier, the administration does believe that flexibility in structuring our programs is important. Some of the areas I pointed out here include welfare reform, education, environmental protection, and health care, that in a lot of cases what works for other states doesn't work so well here, and that we would benefit from greater freedom to work out our own solutions and programs. I might note that given the apparent the fact that there's been some controversy on the states' rights issue over the last week, I'm pleased to announce the administration's support for your resolution.
And I would like to say that I personally am very appreciative, and would you give that thanks to the administration? I would appreciate that.
Certainly.
Is there questions? There being none, is there anyone else that would like to testify on HJR? There being none, what is the pleasure of the committee? Representative Mulder.
Madam Speaker, one point that was brought up to me before with some concern about the conference, and that was the overall writing issue about a constitutional convention. And as you and I have reflected in conversation, that we felt this was an appropriate means as an alternative to a constitutional convention. It really relieves the boiling pot, that it provides an avenue or an opportunity for states to come together in an arena that is other than a constitutional convention, where I think there is a great deal of fear about what might come out of a constitutional convention. This arena allows states to really reflect their concerns and to lay out an issue, a list of expectations for the federal government, whereby they know what we want. And then if at that point in time the Congress hasn't acted, we can take further steps. So I really think it's a good alternative to the constitutional convention and provides a lot of safeguards in that sense.
Thank you very much. Additional comments or questions? There being none, what is the pleasure of the committee?
Madam Speaker.
Representative Davis.
Madam Speaker, I move for the committee pass House Joint Resolution number 20 and submit it with all attachments to the next committee referral.
Thank you. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, HJR 20 moves from the committee. Do I have a sign it? Do I have it? Is there anything that any of the committee members would like to bring before the committee at this time? There being none, I would like to remind all of you that our next meeting will be Thursday, February the 9th. At that time, we will have an overview by the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. We will also hear testimony from John Siebert, Executive Director, Alaska Science and Technology Foundation, and it will be a joint meeting with International Trade and Tourism. And I personally wish to thank all of you for being here today and for the participation by the public. I think it was good for our first bill hearing, that we've had the well-prepared remarks that we have had. Thank you all.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
What's your wishes here? Is this something you want us to keep now, or you want us to leave this
committee?
Now that
we have passed those from this committee, they are yours to keep.
Okay, so I'll keep
file. And we will then pass the committee file on to the next committee of referral. Madam Speaker?
Madam Speaker, it's not very often that we have a chance to participate in issues such as this that really get to the not only history and development of our country, but also the future of our country. I think it was pretty interesting today.
Thank you very much. I do believe that it is significant that this is a brand new committee. We have heard issues that are brand new to our state first, and I think that as time goes on, the overriding issues of the state concern will likely come through this committee. And I'm very pleased to have each and every one of you as committee members.
Thanks.
Anything else? I love you too, sweetie. Meeting's adjourned. That was perfect.